Hello everyone, you're listening to J Movie Talk, episode 118, as I'll be talking Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare.
As a boy, he was always different. No one understood him.
You ready for it, boy?
It's time to take your medicine.
Thank you, sir.
No one could control him.
Go inside, honey.
But now, it's a new beginning. The beginning of the end for Freddy.
Every town has an Elm Street.
I'm screaming while the bus is in motion.
It's your mind you'll go for.
I'll get you, my pretty, and your little soul, too.
We're gonna have to hit him with everything we've got.
Now I'm playing with power.
We're in Twin Peaks here.
It's gotta be me and him.
You wanna live?
Maggie, what's up?
What's with kids today, huh?
Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare.
Great graphics.
They've saved the best for last.
Alright everybody, I am back, continuing on my Nightmare on Elm Street recap of the whole franchise, and I'm up to Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare, or as I like to refer to it as, the movie that I don't think anyone truly likes of this franchise. I don't know anybody that is a fan of this movie from the franchise. If you are, no knocks against you, but at the same time, I don't know how anyone could truly be a fan of this movie. But once again, like I say, it's not a knock against you. It's just, I'll get into it, and by the end of this episode, I'll give all my reason for why I feel the way I feel about this episode, about this movie. And everything. So, as you guys know who do listen to the show, I like to do the cast overview. For anyone who's new to the podcast, I do the cast overview, just talk about the main characters and everything. And then also, I've been actually talking about the directors for each movie too, so I'll get to that right now. So, the main cast of characters for this movie, we have, of course, Robert Englund returning once again as Freddy Krueger. Lisa Zane as Maggie Burrs, Sean Greenblatt as John Doe, Leslie Dean as Tracy, Ricky Dean Logan as Carlos, Brecken Meyer as Spencer, Yapit Kota as Doc, and then we have a few cameo appearances by Tom Arnold and Roseanne Barr, or as she's credited as, Mrs. Tom Arnold. Johnny Depp, he has a cameo appearance, and he's credited as Oprah Noodle Mantra, whatever kind of name that is. Robert Shea shows up once again as a ticket seller, and of course he's going again by his alias of L.E. Moco or whatnot. And then Alice Cooper as Freddy's father shows up as well. So that's pretty much your main cast of characters for this movie. Lisa Zane, who is the sister of Billy Zane. This actually is the only movie that I've ever seen with her. I've never seen anything else that she's been in or anything like that. But I'll talk more about her as well as this goes on. And of course, some of the other people. That's in this movie as well, because a few of them I kind of completely forgot was in this, like a Yapit Kota, as well as a young Breckenmeyer as well. But just want to talk about the director for this movie, Rachel Talalay. Yeah, I believe that's what I said. Talalay. This was actually her first directing job. I don't know how exactly she got to be the director of this or anything. I didn't really look it up to see, but this was her first movie and everything. And then she followed that with a movie called Ghost in the Machine, which I've never seen or even heard of. And she directed Tank Girl, which I've seen maybe once all the way through and seen bits and pieces since then. But yeah, she directed Tank Girl. And those are the only movie that she did. Everything else she's done since has been TV shows or TV made for TV movies. Now, I was surprised to find out that she actually has directed an episode of a TV show that I currently watch called American Gods, which comes on Stars. She's actually directed one of the episodes and everything. So a little surprised by that and everything. But I can see why she didn't direct any more major studio movies after Freddy's Dead. And Tank Girl being her last one in 95 and everything like that, because she has a music video type of style of directing, which, I mean, for some people it might work, but for her it just didn't kind of come across for me, especially in this movie. But I'll get more to that. So the movie opens up with John Doe, as we know him as. He's on an airplane, and this whole scene plays out similar to the Twilight Zone episode with William Shatner, you know, guy that's sitting on the plane by the window, and there's something on the wing, you know, type of thing. That's my William Shatner impersonation. I know it's terrible. But yeah, it starts off like that with John Doe. He's very paranoid and he wants to get off of this plane and everything. And we find out that he's, of course, dreaming, and he gets sucked out of the plane, and as he's falling back to Earth, he basically falls back into his body and wakes up in his house or whatnot. And from there we find out that he's still somewhat in a dream as he gets up and he opens the window, and the house is floating through the air. And probably one of the worst scenes, probably not only in this franchise but probably in any franchise, we have Freddy Krueger riding a freaking witch broom, acting like the Wicked Witch from The Wizard of Oz or whatnot. And it's one of the worst of things that they started having Freddy do as the series went along. And we know Freddy's popularity went through the roof, but at the same time, some of the stuff they started having him do, I mean, it kind of starts in part three, but it was minimal. In four, it's still somewhat small, but it's ramped up a little bit more. Part five, it really kind of gets, but by the time we get to part six, it's like, okay, we can see why technically this is the final nightmare, because they have basically squeezed out all of the life of what made not only the Nightmare on Elm Street movies good, but also what made Freddy Krueger as a character good. And by this point, it's just like, oh my God, can we please just end this now? Oh, and that, and the movie has just gotten started by this point, keep in mind. But seeing him riding on the witch broom is just completely ridiculous. But he uses John Doe to be his link back to being feared by people, because John Doe apparently is the last of the Elm Street kids, but for some reason he was never put into any mental hospital like the other kids, or was killed off. He was just so happens to be the last one. And I mean, if you try to think about these movies in a logical timeline sense, it doesn't really make sense, because we saw where Alice, you know, finally got rid of him. So how did he come back? What year exactly did he come back? And he basically kills off all of the kids that was on in Springwood, and there's none left except for John Doe. How that happened, I don't know, but nothing in this movie completely makes any sense. One of the things I didn't like about this movie is what they did with the misdirection of the John Doe character, of making you think that not only was he your lead protagonist, but that also too that he was the son of Freddy Krueger. But of course we find out later that he's not actually, and it's actually a different character, but I'll talk about that when I get to talking about that character in particular. But having you think that he's, and it's even said by John Doe in the movie, like, why did you keep me alive if, you know, whatnot, and find that he was basically just a puppet. He was used. And the character itself, I mean, the character is named John Doe. He doesn't even have a real name. But what made him, why him though, that need to be used as this link? I mean, you could have kind of taken that character out, used the character that is his kid, and still kind of did some of the same stuff. You didn't really need to even make this character in the movie to get, I mean, to get Freddy, you know, back into being feared by everyone outside of Springwood to some degree. Similar to what I've been doing also is, you know, talking about all of the teenagers that come along throughout the series, because I'll probably say starting with part three is where, well, no, even with the original, some of the kids that are friends throughout, I mean, when you look at their characteristics, it's like, okay, how exactly are they friends with each other or whatnot? But here, I would probably say it's the most closest of teenagers being similar to each other, and you could actually see being friends, because you have the character of Tracy, who's this hard-nosed girl who, you know, you can tell she's been through some things, and then you have Carlos, who clearly has been through some things, and has been, and it's also even referenced that maybe he was abused so bad, henceforth why he wears the hearing aids and everything. And so that tells a lot about him. And then, of course, you have the character Spencer, played by Breckin Meyer, who is, in a sense, a rich kid, but he rebels against being like that. So he's friends with these, I don't want to say like lesser kids, but at the same time, he wants to be, he feels like he's more real if he's with, you know, the kind of kids that are Carlos and Tracy. In a sense. So with them, at least you could say that they're more similar and more realistic of being friends or whatnot, even though they're in this youth shelter or whatnot. That, which is funny about this, is because this youth shelter is like, it's like any kids that are homeless on the streets or run away, oh, let's just take them to the youth shelter. It doesn't even like, oh, we're going to try to take them back to their parents or whatnot. The cops, they just pick them up. Well, let's take them to the youth shelter. You know, type of thing. Like, we don't want to deal with this. Let them deal with this whole situation. I did like the social commentary that's in this movie. I did mention about the whole thing with Carlos, that he mentions about the reason why he stopped talking back to his parents is because, and he kind of points to his ear, I guess, like I say, I don't know if he's his mom or his dad, probably most likely his dad, probably beat him so bad that he lost his hearing, which is a terrible thing, child abuse, of course. And it's referred to quite a few times throughout the movie that Tracy was molested by her dad and everything. And then Spencer has this kind of off relationship with his dad, and even applies that his dad might be a date rapist or was one back when he was in college or something like that. So there is like some social commentary about the youth, and that's kind of been an overall thing about this franchise that I like, is that they did kind of bring up certain social issues when it came to teenagers, and it was always kind of masqueraded, you know, about parents not really paying attention to things, and henceforth Freddy is the result of that. Kind of similar to like a Jason Voorhees with the Friday the 13th movies, that, or if you had premarital sex and smoked weed or anything like that, you're not paying attention, you get Jason Voorhees or whatnot. So I did like how they kind of did that with this movie, too. And because I kind of completely forgot about that because of how much I kind of don't like the movie overall. But that is wrapped in there in a way that is relatable, and people like I say, people could relate to some of these characters in the movie. So there's one thing, one good thing I can say about the movie. So John is picked up by the cops, like I said earlier, and, you know, by these cops who don't want to deal with him. So it's like, oh, let's just take him to the youth center. They can, he can be their problem. So he goes there and he meets Maggie, played by Lisa Zane, who herself has been having this reoccurring dream of her being a little girl playing in the backyard with her parents. And also there's a water tower, but she can't figure out exactly what it is or whatnot, because we do find out later in the movie that Maggie is adopted and everything. So we assume that, of course, these are her real, you know, her real parents that she's dreaming about, but she don't know exactly who they is. But we find out that John and Maggie do have a connection when it's brought up about the water tower and also about Springwood and everything. Now, probably one of the biggest things about this movie I didn't like is that we get this whole revisionist history of Freddy. Now, through the course of the series, we do know that his mother was a nun that worked at this insane asylum, and he is the product of a thousand maniacs because his mother was trapped in with a bunch of them, and they ended up raping her, and we get Freddy born from that. Now, that's been discussed multiple times throughout certain sequels. Now, we never knew that Freddy had a family. We never knew he was married. We never knew he had a kid. But this movie, he was married. He was happily married. And he had a daughter or whatnot. And it's like, where did this come from? Why was this never brought up before? I mean, I understand they did that for the purposes of this movie. But at the same time, you just don't rewrite the whole thing, history of it. It's very similar to of what they do with Jason Goes to Hell. All of a sudden, you got Voorheeses all over the place that are related to Jason, when originally it was just Jason Voorhees and the mom, and just a sprinkle of acknowledgement of his dad, Elias. I mean, and everything, which that's only from like storyboard and stuff like that. But there was no mention of a sister, a niece, and everything like this. Like, where all these Voorhees people come from? And it's kind of the same thing here. Where did this wife come from, and where did this daughter come from? And it just kind of bothered me that they went that route. Now, I did like the fact that they kind of went through like a history to show that Freddy had this history of violence, and that's the whole thing with Alice Cooper being his dad, abusing him and everything like that. And then, you know, how he became basically the dream demon. He basically accepted, you know, the demons into him so he could live forever in the dream world type of thing. Cheesy and corny as that is, but at least that somewhat made sense to how he became a dream demon. But everything else is like, really? Or whatnot? But speaking of Lisa Zane, just have to talk about her performance in this movie. Like I said, it's the only thing that I've really seen her in. And like I say, she is the sister of Billy Zane, who I actually covered, who I kind of talked about in the Demon Knight, Tales from the Crypt Demon Knight episode or whatnot. And Billy Zane, he's always been one of those actors that you like him, whether he's in a good movie or a bad movie. He is always enjoyable to watch in a movie. And like I say, with this being the only thing that I've seen of his sister Lisa and everything, I mean, she's good in certain parts, but at the same time, you can see why probably she isn't on the same level as Billy in a way. As far as acting, she's not really that good of an actress, but she's solid enough. And in certain parts, she's, like I say, certain parts, you can tell that she's stretching her limits as an actress or whatnot. But I didn't have too much of a problem with her. So as the movie kind of goes along, Maggie and John, because of their connection and the whole thing about Springwood, they end up going back to Springwood. And as they're on the way there, you have Spencer, Tracy, and Carlos, who was hiding out in the back of the van because they were trying to escape from the youth shelter. You find out that they're there. So that's how they all end up in Springwood together. And they stop at this fair, this town fair, which is probably one of the weirdest things that you'd ever see. And you have all these parents there who are basically acting as if they still have children when there's no kids around, but they're there having a good time. And then they run into freaking Roseanne and Tom Arnold. And Roseanne basically wants to take the kids home and, you know, stand talking about that they're going to make it right this time. And she wouldn't make the same mistakes and lose them like she lost their real kids. And Tom Arnold comes along and tell her, you know, he kind of does like a crazy, what's his name? I can't remember his name right now. Sam Kinison, I'm sorry. Does like a Sam Kinison on them, like, look what you done did, and everything like this, you know, yelling and all this type of stuff. And it's like, why exactly is Tom Arnold and Roseanne here? Why are they here? But the scene overall is kind of weird. But I did find out that originally what's going on here with the parents kind of in this whole depressed denial type thing, just kind of floating around, was one of the original concepts for this movie, where Freddy would be in the dream world, at least. Freddy would be kind of defeated because no one was afraid of him anymore. So kids was actually going into their dreams and they were just beating the holy hell out of Freddy in the dreams. And he was just so weak and he couldn't defend himself or anything like that. And it was probably similar to like how the parents are in this scene. So I think that's, they kind of went the route with this, which, in a way, in theory, it would have been interesting to see a defeated Freddy being, you know, beat to hell by kids or whatnot, and then eventually someone would fear him and that's how he would kind of regain his powers. But in theory that works, but I think they kind of went the right route by having the parents being like in this delusional denial thing of kids, you know, being gone, and they just kind of moping around because they don't know what to do with themselves or whatnot. So they end up leaving the fair. Maggie and John, they decide to go to the high school or whatnot to try to find some answers, as the rest of the kids, they try to leave in the van, and they get this whole thing where they get trapped in a loop or whatnot, where they're going around, which is somewhat of a callback to part 4 with Alice and Dan trying to, you know, leave from the diner, and they keep getting in the truck and they end up going around this time loop or whatnot. That's what kind of happens with them. So, of course, they're stuck in Springwood. And then they end up going to this house or whatnot that's supposed to be for sale. And as they go inside, we see where the outside transforms into Nancy's old house, which we find out too was actually Freddy's old house and everything. And they end up being picked off here. At least Carlos is the first one to get killed. And I have to say that how Freddy kills off Carlos is kind of creepy in a way, because of the fact that Carlos, he uses the fact that Carlos is deaf when he takes out his hearing aid. And another thing I do kind of like is that when they take out the hearing aid, they drop out the sound. So you as a viewer is actually kind of going through everything as Carlos. When he can't hear, we can't hear anything. And he, for some reason, decides to go upstairs and falls asleep. And that's how Freddy ends up getting him in the dream world and takes out his hearing aid, cuts off his ear, and kind of start terrorizing him or whatnot. And then he gives him back the hearing aid. And as he puts it in his ear, we get these, like, freaking claws or whatnot. It's actually a cool little effect or whatnot, how it does with his ear. And, of course, it's been Freddy's eyes or whatnot, if that's even a real word. But he actually his hearing is kind of turned all the way up to an extreme amount that even the slightest thing that falls or drips or whatnot, it hurts his ears. And Freddy, of course, uses this, and he pulls out a chalkboard and basically scratches the chalkboard until Carlos' head explodes and everything. And that's how he gets rid of Carlos. And now, even though I like the Carlos death or whatnot, the one with Spencer with the whole video game, Nintendo, him playing games, I think it's one of the cheesiest things ever. And I mean, yeah, because Nintendo was new and fresh at the time in 1991 or whatnot. So, okay, I get it. You want to use that. But at the same time, if you're doing it in the video game world, okay, but once it comes back into the real world or whatnot, it just looked hokey. And the fact that they have Breckenmeyer like spinning around, speeding around, and acting as if he's in a video game. It's like, what the hell is this? Why am I watching this? And but once again, you just realize, oh, you're just halfway through the movie, but you got to keep pressing on, type of thing. And then Freddy, I mean, eventually ends up killing him by tossing him down the stairs into the, like, this pit or whatnot. And then the blood of him comes out through the TV and everything. And I will say this, when Freddy kills off characters, Carlos and Spencer, their souls go into him, which makes Freddy stronger and everything. And so I did kind of like that. By him killing off kids, it made him stronger. So, and I think that's what, like, one of the original concepts was going to be with the whole defeated Freddy. Once he started killing again, he would become stronger and everything like that. Now, we do find out, like, halfway through, because it's, I mean, even if you've seen it for the first time or whatnot, it becomes clearly obvious when you find out that John is not actually Freddy's kid, is actually Maggie, because of the whole thing of that she's been having this reoccurring dream about her real parents and you never see the face. John thinks that he's the child of Freddy because of the fact that Freddy allows him to live to bring back people to fear him and everything. But it becomes very obvious that it's not really John, that's his kid, it's actually Maggie. And when Freddy eventually kills off John and everything, he even says it like, you're not my kid and everything, just to let John know, like, it's not you, I just used you to get my kid here, type of situation. Because once it gets into her head is where he begins to really try to, you know, really, he feels that, I guess he feels that in that time that he's able to get into the mind, especially the fact that she works at a youth shelter, then he can get in, his reign of terror will begin, because everywhere there's an Elm Street, as he says later on at some point in the movie or whatnot. Now, talking about Tracy, one thing I noticed about this movie, because this movie has a lot of callbacks to previous movies of the franchise, because this was built up as being the final Nightmare, the final movie in the franchise. They was ending it after this, and everything, henceforth why it's called Freddy. And it really was ending the franchise, and to some degree it really was the end of the franchise, of the original franchise. When I do New Nightmare, I'll talk about that. But as far as what the whole thing was, this actually was the final Nightmare on Elm Street. So there are a lot of callbacks to the movies that came before it. And one particular thing is that Tracy is somewhat like a ripoff of Alice to some degree, because she's practicing to be a fighter and everything, because she wants to fight. She needs to protect herself, which comes back to the whole thing about the molestation from her dad. But the way she dressed is similar to how Alice dressed when she, in part four, when she has on the jacket and the boots and everything, she, you know, used the karate to fight against Freddy. She's very similar to Alice in that regard. And then I felt like the character of Maggie to some degree is almost like a Nancy type of character, like a combination of Nancy from part one and from part three. And then there's even a part in the movie where she goes home, Maggie that is, and she's yelling for her mom, and she's even saying like mother, similar to how Nancy would say her mother, you know, call her mother, you know, and everything like that. And then of all people, you have Yapit Kota and everything, who I felt like was similar to, he was like a cross between Lawrence Fishburne, Max, and also Dr. Neil Gordon from part three. He felt like a combination of the two of them in to some way. So like I said, there was quite a few callbacks. And then even Carlos, I forgot to mention Carlos, he even has somewhat of a Johnny Deppish look to him with how he dressed and even his hairstyle and everything. So there was quite a few, like I say, callbacks and references to the movies that came before and everything, which I don't have too much of a problem with that. But it's just kind of interesting that they decided to kind of throw all this stuff, like, I don't know if it was supposed to be homages, tributes, whatever, or it's just, okay, let's just give like the greatest hits and everything from the franchise, because we know we're ending it after this movie. Speaking of Yapit Kota, his performance. He comes into the movie relatively late in the movie. I mean, I did think that they were going to kill him off. I was surprised that he actually lives in the end. So there's two black guys that actually meet up with Freddy and live. So through the course of this franchise, three black people come into contact with Freddy, and we actually live. That's Yapit Kota, Lawrence Fishburne, who doesn't actually come into contact with Freddy, which I talked about on that episode. It would have been cool if he did have like a scene with Freddy or whatnot. But he lives through that movie. Yapit lives through this one. And Kelly Jo Mentor, she lives in part 5, and she doesn't come back in part 6 to be killed off. So that was good. So they all live or whatnot. But I did think I think I actually liked his performance there, even though I felt like there could have been a little bit more to him or whatnot, especially with the fact that he had this thing about he could be, you know, about controlling the dreams and everything like this. He knew about the dream demons and stuff like that. It's never fully explained how he knew about any of this. It's just, oh, he knows about this stuff and everything. So when the revelation finally comes about that Maggie is actually Freddy's daughter and everything, and she sees him basically kill her mother and everything like that, when she actually remembers the whole dream at this point, and then Freddy comes to her in the dream world, and you know, he kind of tells her like, now I can finish my work and everything and all this type of stuff, and he doesn't want to harm her. Actually, he actually wants to kind of work through her, in a sense, kind of similar to part 2 with Jesse. He wants to do everything going through them, in a sense, and they will be, and she will be the catalyst to help him bring him back to his, you know, reign of terror in a way. But so of course she ends up coming back, and that's where the whole thing happens with Tracy getting into a dream and dreaming about her dad and beat him up and turns into Freddy, because Freddy is getting ready to kill her. But right before Freddy can actually do anything, Maggie is actually able to pull Tracy back out of the dream world. And I thought it was interesting that Tracy actually lives in this movie, because I kind of thought that she would have been killed off. I mean, especially with the other ones, kids being killed off, but they allowed Tracy to live. So she was kind of like I know I said Alice too, but she's like a cross between Kristen and Alice to some degree. Robert Englund's performance in this one, he has more to do here, because we do get this whole history backstory with him and certain things. I mean, yeah, the comedic levels is up to 1,000 in this movie, but there are a few scenes that he actually shows why he is a good actor. In particular, the scene with him and Alice, as he's trying to pretend like, you know, when she brings him back into the real world and he's Freddy without the burns and everything, and you see him how he truly is, and he's like, you know, I'm sorry, this wasn't how it's supposed to be, I'm sorry for everything I've done, and they took you away from me, and we can be together, and this, that, and the other. Robert Englund actually puts on a really good performance, and like I say, shows that he can really act. He's not just, you know, he's more than just Freddy Krueger. He always been more than just Freddy Krueger. Just this is his most famous and iconic role that he's played. So I thought he did a pretty good job in this movie, considering some of the silly stuff that he does throughout this movie, in particular the whole riding the witch broom thing. Now the finale of this, when Maggie goes into the dream world to pull him out, and she has these 3D glasses. Now, from what I remember of the story of this from watching the documentary, the whole last act of this movie, when she puts on the 3D glasses, is for audiences seeing it back in that time. If you put on your 3D glasses at the same time, then you would see everything in 3D as well. Now, I don't know how that worked, because I didn't see the movie in 1991 or anything, but I'm pretty sure that was kind of a hokey thing and a gimmick just to get people to come see the movie and everything. But I mean, of course, you don't really see it now, and I don't think they ever released that version with the 3D effect. I could be wrong. I'm not sure about that, but it just came across very cheesy and hokey, because when she puts on the glasses and she's there, like, trying to do the 3D stuff with her hand and everything, and it's like, okay, I'm not seeing anything 3D, so is this really even 3D or whatnot, or did they just kind of play on the minds of people to with the 3D? Like I said, I'm not really sure about that, but I know it was kind of hokey or whatnot and everything. But she ends up, you know, pulling him out, and they're, Doc and Tracy are there, like, red. He has a pair of nunchucks. I don't know what the heck that was that Tracy had, like a, I don't know if it was a trident that she had. I'm not even sure, but she had something in her hand, and they were, like, ready to attack him as if he was going to be there, but he wasn't. And then that's when she finds him in another room, in the boiler room, actually. And that's when the whole scene go down with him pretending like he was a victim himself and everything. And, you know, he, you know, she, they could be together. And because they took him, they took her away from him and all that stuff, and look what they did. But then, of course, he turns back into Freddy, and he's trying to attack her and all this stuff. And so they get into a fight, and then she ends up stabbing him and nailing him to the, to like the pipes or whatnot. And then she kills him, and he explodes, and I mean, Freddy's dead. And it sucks that that is the last line of the movie about Freddy's dead and everything like this. And that's how it goes off. Now, I did like the closing credits to the movie, because it kind of goes back and shows you, like, the greatest hits of the franchise, you know, and everything like that as the credits is rolling. So I did like that aspect of it. But overall, I mean, this movie is not good. It does have a few good parts, because every bad movie has some good parts to it. Every bad movie, no matter how bad the movie is, there are some, at least one or two decent things about every bad movie. I'm pretty sure on paper it looked like, hey, this is a good idea, but the execution of a lot of it just kind of fell through, and everything. But overall, if I had to give this movie a rating, I mean, I was gonna give it a 1, but I give it a 1.5. I mean, it clearly is the worst of the franchise, but even worse than Part 2. And I gave Part 2, I think I gave it a 2. I can't remember if I did or not, but I think I gave it a 2. But this movie clearly is the worst, and it's a good thing they kind of ended the original franchise with this film, because there was nothing else they could do after this. Or whatnot. A favorite character. I don't know if I have a favorite character really, but if I have to choose one, I know I didn't pick one for the last one because of just how that one was, but I say that Robert Englund is my favorite in this one. Even with riding the witch broom and everything like that, but he does give a, you could tell he's trying. He's having fun with it. At least he has fun. I think that's one reason why a lot of people continue to like the franchise, even though things fell off the rails as the franchise went along, because Robert Englund continued to have fun with it. So he would have to be my favorite, and everything like that. So I'm gonna thank everyone for listening to this episode. Of course, I'll be back to close it up as I talk about Wes Craven's New Nightmare. That'll be the end of the series for me, and then I'll be moving on to something else. So of course you can check me out on Twitter at JMovieTalk, and everything like that. I did put up a post about what I'll be covering for May as well, because it is May, and May action is coming back, and so you can definitely check out that post and everything like that. If you want to have me, you know, recap something or do like a top five or something like that, you can, of course, either hit me up on Twitter at JMovieTalk, or you can also shoot me an email at JMovieTalk@gmail.com, and I can kind of work something into the schedule, and everything like that, and also give you guys a shout out on the episode of what I'll be covering and everything like that. If you pick something for me, of course, you can find all the episodes on TV Zone Podcast Network on Podbean.com, the host site, as well as iTunes, Stitcher, wherever else you listen to your podcast. And also, too, if you listen on Podbean or also on iTunes, you know, please give a rating, everything like that. You know, let us know how we're doing, you know, with the shows that's on the TV Zone Podcast Network and everything. You know, just give us a little rating. And then, like I said, if you want to, you know, have my podcast or for Frodo or anybody else, what we cover, something for you guys, you know, just let us know and everything. And like I say, try to work it to the schedule for you guys, things like that. And thanks again for listening. And I will be back for episode 119 as I close up my Nightmare on Elm Street series with Wes Craven's new nightmare. Peace.